Wait a minute. Wait a minute. You know, this is, excuse me, a damn fine cup of coffee.
Got a gal named Sandy Lou. Got a lover of the things she do. Got to see her little fingers in my hair. Boy, you know it makes me feel so bad. Ooh, Sandy Lou. Crazy, crazy about the things you do. Lord, I love it when you do the Eagle Rock. Lord, you know it makes my heart tick tock.
In directa con Harbour Bazaar con Stephen Hastings e Zoe Howe sulla parca pieno di bombe. Ascolta.
How do you do? Are you terribly well? I can see you are. Good show.
There we go, the marvellous Dick Penner with Cindy Lou. Welcome to the Harbour Bazaar on Shipful of Bombs, www.sfob.co.uk. Hope all fine and dandy with everybody out there, but more importantly, hope all fine and dandy with you, Zoe Howe.
All the better for being on the good ship Harbour Bazaar, Captain Hastings. And how are you this fine evening?
I'm a martyr to my leg at the moment. I'm
in agony. For mischief.
Oh, they, yes, indeed. So, but no, all will be fine. Not too bad. Not too bad. Obviously, we're back in our kind of lockdown world and things. So, yes. So, here we're pondering what's happening in the world. Pondering what's happening in the world.
It seems like a very good time of year, being as we are in the dark months, to be discussing what we're going to be discussing this evening. I'm very, very excited. About the theme of the show.
And what is the theme of the show this evening, Zoe Howe?
Well, I'll tell you, Mr. Hastings. It is, in fact, our much anticipated, at least by us, probably not by anybody else, it's our highly anticipated Twin Peaks show.
It is our Twin Peaks show. Obviously, it's David Lynch's birthday today, we understand.
Happy birthday, David Lynch.
Oh, he listens every month. I like his style.
He's a big fan.
I like his style. So what are we going to be doing with Twin Peaks? I mean, I'm hoping you're going to be able to explain to me exactly what goes on in that show frame by frame.
I don't think anyone knows what goes on, even David Lynch. It's a very dreamlike thing, and I think that's part of what's special about it. So yes, I will certainly be a guiding hand through the dark world of Twin Peaks where possible. But I must say that I actually thought that you probably knew the series better than you did. But seeing as, you know, I was going to say that opening choice of yours, Cindy Lou, is a very instinctively Twin Peaksy track. It's exactly the sort of song that you'd expect to hear in the Double R Diner. in Twin Peaks. So yeah, absolutely perfect, perfect mood. And of course, David Lynch is massively into that 50s thing as well. So it was a good way to start us off, I think.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the thing for me. I mean, I did watch it at the time, and again, I did the last time I saw any of Twin Peaks was actually at your birthday party a few years ago.
That's where it was right. Yes,
it was
in fact,
the theme of the evening.
I had a Twin Peaks birthday party, everybody. I'm sorry if you weren't invited, but I have a very small flat, and also I don't like many people. So it was probably one of those reasons if you didn't attend. But no, it was great fun. We watched a bit of Twin Peaks, the original first series. Some of us came in costume. I went as poor Mad Nadine with her eye patch, and Dylan was the tragic Laura Palmer.
If you don't mind me saying, Dylan threw himself rather well into that part.
He sure did. He was. We went to town with the sort of cellophane shroud, because I mean it's not a spoiler to say that the first thing you see in the first episode of the first series of Twin Peaks is the tragic Laura Palmer, who was washed up in a kind of plastic kind of encasing, if that's the right word, and the sort of the mystery unfolds from there. Who killed Laura Palmer is the big question of the series. No spoilers here, though, Mr. Hastings. But
no, we will avoid spoilers. And even if we did put spoilers in, I don't think it would mar anyone's appreciation of the show, because there's so much else going on. I do remember, when did it come out? It was about 1990, wasn't it?
Exactly right. Yes, the first series. I always thought it was more of an 80s thing, but no, it was 1990. And it was, you know, absolutely just a cult viewing, addictive. And David Lynch, of course, made a new series, which came out 3 years ago, and it was like, oh god, you know, it was so great the first time around. Is it going to match up? And I have to say, it was fantastic. I recommend it to everybody, that you know, just watch them all. They're brilliant. And of course, fortunately for us and the purpose of our show this evening, the choice of music is always very, very, very good indeed.
Well, I think that's the kind of thing. I think what we've both tried to do here, I think, is that notion of tracks that that could have been used in there as well. Do you know what I mean? That sort of inspired by. Obviously, we'll have some things from the soundtrack as well, of course, but things that are sort of inspired by. But it's very eerie, as you say. It's very 50s. It's got that. It's got a great use of music, actually, to be honest. I know David Lynch as a filmmaker is known for that, you know, obviously the one that stands out in terms of, with such a huge impact on how music was being used in soundtracks, was I suppose would be the In Dreams version in Blue Velvet and stuff, as sung by it's not Harry Dean Stanton, is it? What's his fellow camera Apocalypse, Dennis Hopper.
Yes,
there you go. Oh,
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but no, so, you know, I think that the soundtrack's actually massively, massively important. So, you know, looking forward to hearing some of your choices and sharing a few of my own as well. So what should we start with in our Twin Peaks themed shows? I mean, what do you want to kick off with?
Well, I feel that it's it would only be right to start with Julie Cruise, because Julie Cruise, in those early series of Twin Peaks, her voice and her look is absolutely, can't be separated from Twin Peaks at all. She's this kind of nightclub singer, and she's got this strange quality to her voice. It's very dreamy, and the kind of accompaniment that goes with her is a sort of kind of slightly naff, but really beautiful. And I sort of feel that about a lot of the music in Twin Peaks, the music by Angelo Badalamenti, who created the opening theme and all the rest of it, and David Lynch worked with musically as well. But there's just this quality that is just pure Twin Peaks, and Julie Cruise, I can only associate her with Twin Peaks. So I think we should hear Falling by the lovely Julie Cruise.
Don't let yourself
There we go. That was Julie Cruise with Falling, which is the main theme there of Twin Peaks. Fabulous choice, and it's what we had to start with. Perfect stuff, like your style.
And it just, it's such a treat, Stephen, to kind of dive back into Twin Peaks world, and that song is like a portal to that kind of otherworldly. You know, it's actually quite a strange juxtaposition as well, because that soft, melancholy dreaminess of Julie Cruise's voice in that beautiful song, it really kind of rubs up against the very hard elements of Twin Peaks as well, because it's actually quite frightening and it's very dark at times, and there's a lot of kind of occult elements to it and a lot of, you know, violence as well. So it's a really kind of interesting song for that to be kind of the Twin Peaks song, because it's sort of almost like a veil over the violence of Twin Peaks as well. So they're just, it's beautiful. It's so melancholy.
It's a lovely thing and a great start. I mean, again, my first experience with David Lynch, I think for a lot of people, was Eraserhead, which was his kind of first film, which I think he did on a shoestring, on borrowed money, didn't he, I believe. I remember reading somewhere that Henry Spencer walks into a dark area in it. And then the character walks out, you know, seconds later, whereas in reality, the distance between the two shots was something like about 5 months or something, while he was trying to raise the money to kind of keep the project going and things. But I love the Twin Peaks thing. So I remember watching it at the time and revisiting it. It's just that, as you say, it's very surreal. It's very eerie. And it just throws the Log Lady springs to mind. Do you know?
Yes. She is such a, I used to think the idea, because when it came out, I was a bit young. for Twin Peaks. So I would hear about the Log Lady and I'd hear about Twin Peaks, but I didn't really know what they meant. I just thought the Log Lady sounded hilarious. But of course, the reality is that is this very, yes, it is quite funny. You know, she's a kind of unusual, kind of eccentric old lady who goes around talking to her log. But now I look at it and I think, you know, was she a medium who, you know, the messages she was getting were really coming through her? But she would say, oh, my log has a message for you. But it's actually, I sometimes think that, you know, the log is actually a conduit for her own mediumistic powers. It's all very strange. So if you haven't watched Twin Peaks, you're going to think, what the hell is Zoe talking about? But, you know, I'm used to that. So
cool. Well, if that's all of you, I'll play one, which again, first heard in the Razorhead, which is just still such a bizarre scene, which is the lady in the radiator. And it's just that closing up on there. And there's this small figure behind this rattly old style 50s radiator just singing a short song. So let's just have join us in the charms of In Heaven, Lady in the Radiator song here on the Harbour Bazaar.
Creepy stuff. That was Slow 30s Room, David Lynch and Dean Hurley. And that actually turned up in the third series of Twin Peaks, the 2017 series. But I just, I feel there's something deeply creepy about that track. It's like the sort of music that you might hear in a lucid nightmare. That's the only way I can describe it. But I love it as well. Absolutely.
It's very, I mean, the series gets described musically, you know, what it gets described, where are we? Campy, melodramatic, supernatural, uncanny. Visually, it's got an American overly saturated soap opera style at times. So it's like he's parodying something, but loving it at the same time, or just referencing so much of, you know, I know people dislike the term, referencing so much, which could be, you know, like Americana. I mean, the apple pie thing, as you say, that diner, the dinosaur stuff going on, the straightness, you know, Dale Cooper, isn't it? Agent Cooper, the absolute straightness of him. Do you know what I mean?
It's fabulous. But actually, he's really odd, but in a beautiful way. But there are, you know, sort of deep eccentricities there, which are really kind of lovely. And the whole thing sort of hangs on them, and you hang on them. You cling to them as the viewer, because Agent Dale Cooper is this beacon of light within all the darkness. But it is, there's this nightmarish element, but also that deep nostalgia, which David Lynch is so in love with. It's just kind of combines all those things. But that track is so strange. And it does, it just feels like a kind of dark fog around you, and there's a whisper of an old song in there that might have actually been quite upbeat, but time has done something weird to it, and maybe you're in another dimension, and it's sort of twisted and slowed it, and it's not quite as it should be, and it's just that sort of nightmare quality, really. But I love the track that you played before, and of course in Heaven everything is fine. I like to think that you've got your good things and I've got mine. That's exactly how heaven should be. I love that.
there's almost like a country-esque vibe to that. Do you know what I mean? In terms of the melody of it, if you sped it up, you could almost have that as a hoedown. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
But it's just referencing so much. And I think the tragedy for me with all of this is if I think of you know, the world that's depicted, you know, in Twin Peaks, Washington, and compare it to the reality of the nightmare that's in Washington at the moment. Do you know what I mean? It's just different places. And I think I would much rather live there than how it is now, if I'm being brutally honest. But no,
some respects you might, but in others, I don't know. There is evil lurking in that Twin Peaks, in that part of the fictional area of Washington. But I know what you mean. Can't you see, are the two things mutually exclusive? Could you live in Twin Peaks, the fictional town of Twin Peaks, and avoid the evil Bob, for example? Do you have a choice in that matter? I don't know, and I don't know if I'd want to find out. Should I give a little précis of the overall plot?
Thanks for it. Yes, indeed. No problem at all.
I may or may not be reciting this from Wikipedia. I couldn't possibly confirm or deny. It says here, the series follows an investigation headed by FBI Special Agent Dale Cooper, played by the fabulous Kyle MacLachlan, and local sheriff Harry S. Truman, played by Michael Ontkean, who's one of the few actors, actually, who didn't return to the 2017 series.
Okay.
Another mystery. But an investigation into the murder of homecoming queen Laura Palmer in the fictional town of Twin Peaks, Washington. The show's narrative draws on elements of detective fiction, but its uncanny tone, supernatural elements, and campy, melodramatic portrayal of eccentric characters also draw on American soap opera and horror tropes. Like much of Lynch's work, it is distinguished by surrealism, offbeat humour, and distinctive cinematography. The success of the show sparked a media franchise, and the series was followed by a 1992 feature film, Twin Peaks Fire Walk With Me, which I absolutely hate, by the way. That wasn't on for Wikipedia, that was just me.
just are you writing this as we speak? I can see it changing before my eyes.
But yeah, that's the overall kind of doings there. I won't go too much into the plot, just in case anyone's listening and hasn't seen it, because it really is a treat of a world to dive into. But yes, very dark as well.
I think the thing with that as well, though, before we sort of, you know, play some more music from inspired by and a sort of around the whole piece, is the fact that it was huge. It started off huge because there hadn't really been a series like it. And it was really the way it was. It seemed to be advertised, as I recall, it was like almost more mainstream than it actually was. So it started off with a really mainstream audience, which just fell away because there isn't the kind of the typical plot twist that you get in like a in like a soap opera or in a detective story or within any of the tropes that David Lynch is referencing. It hints that that's coming and it just doesn't. Do you know what I mean? So I think people got genuinely confused. So by the time the end of the second series, I know the viewer, the figures have gone quite down, but it had gone from mainstream of people going, oh my God, this is great, you're serious, but into towards the end, a completely different audience going, oh my God, this belongs just to us. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? It's got that it's got that sort of captiousness about it that you get from, you know, from an unknown band or from a, you know, a play that no one's seen or a book you've found or a film you've seen, you know, and it's that thing you want to share with like-minded people and all this kind of stuff. It ends it starts off in one place and ends off somewhere else completely. And I think that's what makes it kind of funky and fantastic, really, to be honest.
Absolutely. How strange as well to imagine it being a mainstream success at all. I mean, that is so weird. I mean, the fact that, as you say, I suppose a lot of those people did fall away, but the fact that it could capture people's imaginations that way and being so odd that it wouldn't just be something that would just kind of be instantly for a kind of cult audience from the word go is amazing and fantastic to me. I don't know if that could happen now. I'm not sure. If, you know, sometimes I sort of, maybe I'm underestimating most people, but I don't know if they've got like the capacity for something that peculiar and fantastical and weird and dark. I think it, you know, it frightens people. I think it still does, but it's there's something also very comforting about it. And I don't know about you, but I sort of, you know, I've become that kind of person where it's like, if you don't like Twin Peaks, or if you've watched it and didn't like it or didn't understand it, I don't think we can be friends.
No. there are things in my life in a similar kind of way. I can't. There was also things which I'm very, very concerned about that I'll in terms of. You know, things, or if that's on your shelf, I don't think we can be friends. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, these things are useful signposts for us. We need to heed them carefully.
All I can say is only fools and horses, but that's another conversation entirely. What are you going to play for us next, Zoe? What's going to be your next track?
Well, I think I would like to play next. Now, this song did not turn up in its form like this by this particular group, but it's a sort of silly old song that lots of people did versions of, and there's a scene in Twin Peaks where Leland Palmer, the father of the late Laura Palmer, he's sort of having a bit of a breakdown, he's started to do some very odd things, and after, I think there's a particular scene where I think he's just done something fairly unspeakable, and then he steams into the office of sleazy Jeremy Horn singing this song and doing a kind of merry tap dance, and it's so it's so infectious, and he just seems so happy in a kind of rather sort of demonic way, but he just seems so happy and thrilled with himself that the that Jeremy Horn and his brother, whose name escapes me, but brilliant character, and I want to talk more about him later, even though I've forgotten his name, it's really professional. But everyone sort of joins in. They just join in with this silly song and this silly dance, and they're doing some incredible dancing. So it just sort of tickles me. And it's a silly old song called Mersey Dotes. And this version is by the Merry Macs.
I know a ditty, nutty as a fruitcake,
and silly as a loon. Some call it pretty,
others call it crazy,
but they all sing this tune. Mersey dotes and dozy dotes and little lambsy divey, a kiddly divey do wouldn't do. Mersey dotes and dozy dotes and little lambsy divey, a kiddly divey do wouldn't do. If the words sound queer and funny to your ear, a little bit jumbled and jivey, sing Mersey Dotes and Dozy Dotes and little lambsy divey. Oh, Mersey Dotes and Dozy Dotes and little lambsy divey, a kiddly divey do wouldn't do. A kiddly divey do wouldn't do. Dotes and dozy,
dotes and little
lambsy divey,
a kiddly
divey do
wouldn't you. Mersey dozy,
dotes and dozy,
dotes and little
lambsy divey,
a kiddly
divey too.
Wouldn't you?
If the words sound queer funny to your ear, a little bit mumble and tumble and jumble and jivey. Sing mares eat oats, does eat oats, little lambs eat ivy.
Mares eat
oats and does eat
oats and little
lambs eat ivy.
A kiddly
divey too.
Wouldn't
you? A kiddly divey too. Wouldn't you?
Absolutely marvellous, the Merry Max there. What can I say? I noticed you were leaping around the room yourself to that one. Because of my aforementioned injury, I'm afraid one day I'll tell you about the tap dancer that Boxy and I bumped into in Leicester Square many years ago, and we realised that he could only tap on one side. So it was all very strong. It was all to the right. And it became fascinating in terms of, is he going to use the other leg, or is it just, it was all running absolutely perfect.
How marvellous.
There we go. Cool. Like your style. That was rather fabulous. I'm really enjoying and really what we've been playing. I'm really looking forward to some of the other kind of tracks and things that could have fitted in and inspired by, because I love that whole, the eeriness of some of the things. What was the one you played before? What was it called? The show 30s, the slow 30s room.
Yeah.
So creepy, but so evocative. Absolutely, absolutely fantastic. Like your style.
And when you get something that's so uplifting, like the Merry Max there, you know, that's even more creepy because it's just so jolly that when you kind of juxtapose that with something really dark happening, then it's, you know, then you're really getting somewhere. I've remembered the character name, by the way. Yeah. It was Ben Horn. Ben Horn is the sleazy kind of like richest guy in Twin Peaks, and his brother is the wacky kind of offbeat Jeremy Horn, and they're quite a duo. And actually, in the 2017 series, Jerry Horn really kind of comes into his own as well. So more about him later, because he's actually a musician in his own right in his other life as a non-actor. He's a really interesting musician.
Like to hear
a bit of music from him later on.
Good stuff. I mean, but it is the Harper Bazaar. Confessions of a radio station. We are pre-recording this one, but it's going out on tonight, which is the 29th of November. So I asked myself the question, I think you may very well ask me the question as well. Whose birthday is it today, perchance?
Yes, whose is it, Stephen?
Well, I'll tell you, there's a few. 1820, we have Friedrich Engels, obviously a good chum of Marx, founding father of the whole international, you know, Marxist sort of pamphlets and diatribes and what have you. So he was there, born in 1820, German English philosopher, economist and journalist, or rather Marv. We have C.S. Lewis of the Narnia books and all that malarkey, Chronicles of Narnia, Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe and all that malarkey. He was a 1898 fan of C.S. Lewis.
Yes, yeah, very much so. Really like The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe, and you know, anything that's imaginative like that and magical is fine by me, Stephen.
All good. Apparently him and J.R.R. Tolkien used to meet quite regularly and discuss plots. So he will be talking about the whole Narnia world and the backstory of this and what the wardrobe was made from, and all this kind of, because I think isn't the wardrobe supposed to be made from the wood that was used to make the cross that Jesus is crucified on, and there's all lots of kind of Christian allegories and crossovers in that kind of way.
Wow, that's interesting. Oh, I like that. I like that they used to meet up. That's
they cute. Did. So, your man CS would be talking about, you know, you know, what's the name of the witch? I can't remember her name. Is the Snow Queen lady? What's her?
Yes, I can't remember either, but I can see her in my mind's eye.
So he's talking that side, and then you've got good old J.R.R. Tolkien out the other side banging on about orcs.
Oh, to be a fly on the wall.
Indeed, so indeed. So who else have we got? 1851, Roger Trout. Not 1951, 1951. Roger Troutman, who was the American singer-songwriter and producer of the band Zapp, who I know Dan and Daryl particularly will be keen of Mr. Troutman, who's he was very big with the vocoder, don't you know? That was one of
the... I do love a vocoder. What sort of Peter Frampton style-y?
Yeah, the track that springs to mind is a track called Do Our Diddy, which I think wouldn't really fit in thematically with today's show, but remind me.
Right thing, a vocoder. Now, hang on, that's something different. Is that the sort of thing that Laurie Anderson used to use?
It's the vocoder is the it's the tube in the mouth speaking.
Yeah. Right. Gotcha.
Lot always seems a bit salivary to me.
Yeah, no, anything like that. I'm not a big fan of that. You know, anything that sort of involves saliva. No. Got to be completely dry, Stephen.
Yes, indeed. You don't want your tone dictated by how phlegmy you're feeling that particular
day. Oh, no, absolutely not.
Talking of phlegmy singers, equally, 1956, David Van Day, English singer, born in 1956, he of dollar fame.
Of course. Big fan in this household, absolutely.
I can't think of a track by Dollar other than I know his partner in crime. Her name was it Teresa Bazaar, if I remember rightly?
How appropriate. Or what spelling are we talking? Bizarre or Bazaar?
I think she goes Bazaar, to be honest. So it actually ties in quite nicely. Maybe there is a place for Dollar on the Bazaar.
Maybe.
There we go. Other kind of things. A few deaths on this day as well. We won't dwell on those. But one that did spring to mind, 1968, Enid Blyton. She died on the 29th of November. She has a mixed reception now, doesn't she, don't you think?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, what are your views on the Blyton?
I used to like my sister used to have a series of books which were about a couple of twins, I think, who lived at a school called St. Clair's. I quite enjoyed reading about those. I was never one for the Secret Seven, Fantastic, whatever they were called, Super Five or Glorious Five-Year Plan. I'm not too sure what they were called. I didn't find those particularly, but again, we were speaking about Billy Bunter earlier. I was a sucker for people at public schools, basically. Those kind of stories. So very far away, but I think, yeah, she's a product of her time. What's your thoughts? But
I don't really have any, to be honest. I mean, generally, just don't have any thoughts in my head. Just going from A to B and making the best of it, really. But no, Rhea Enid. I never really read her books, I don't think, when I was a kid. I know there's all sorts of kind of mentions of ginger beer being lashed about.
Yeah.
I don't know, really.
They're brutally formulaic. And the thing that has been the criticism of her over the last, I suppose, really couple of decades is that they're just insanely snobbish. And very, very much of a particular worldview. Just probably a bit dated now, but fair play. The lady wrote a lot of books. So all
Noddy, hang on, is Noddy an Enid Blyton product?
I think you have identified one of the premier Enid Blyton characters. Some people would have gone Mr. Twizzle or Saucepan Man, but you've gone Noddy.
I've gone for Noddy and Big Ears, of course, mustn't forget him. Big fan, that's kind of my level, really, I'd say, Noddy. So, yeah, quite happy sitting back with a Noddy of an evening.
Like you stole one of the
hot Noddy.
Who features in, and Noddy features in one of the greatest comedy sketches of all time, which is part of Chris Morris's Jam. And again, maybe we'll... not something that could be broadcast, but maybe we'll share some links at the end of the podcast. I'm not entirely sure. Who else did we have death-wise? We had 1993. We had Kenneth Connor
of Carry On Fame.
Yeah, but he died in 1993. But other things happened on this day as well. 1814. In 1814, the Times of London became the first newspaper to be produced on a steam-powered printing press manufactured by the German team of Koenig and Bauer. There you go. Wow.
And
on the front page of that, they were advertising a performance of Richard III that was going on at the Theatre Royal in Covent Garden in 1814.
Blimey, that's a
you know, the reviews were just appalling, but that's another matter. And last one for me for a bit, but it does tie in equally today. Today's the day that in 1877, that Thomas Edison demonstrated his phonographic device for the very first time.
Oh, wow.
Would you like to hear Thomas Edison's first ever recording?
I certainly would.
It's not a long track. It's less than 8 seconds, but it does tie in. Does tie in rather well with your previous with our last song choice. In all fairness, so here we go. Take it away, ladies and gentlemen. This is Thomas Edison, first ever phonographic recording.
Mary had a little lamb. Its fleece was white as snow, and everywhere that Mary went, the lamb was sure to go.
There you go.
Wow. Oh my God, that's fantastic.
First ever phonographic recording by Mr. Thomas A. Edison, or rather Marv, and that was 1877. So everything that we know, everything that we play, every track on the soundtrack of Twin Peaks, we owe something to Mr. Thomas Edison. So I think we should have that one more time.
Yes.
Mary had a little lamb, its fleece was white as snow, and everywhere that Mary went, the lamb was sure to go.
There we go.
Oh, fantastic. Great to hear that.
Cool. Well, I've got another couple of birthdays and a very important event on this day as well. But the one I did want to sort of mention and play a track for, if that is okay, it was today, 2001. This was the day that George Harrison died. In all fairness, so that this was that day. So my favourite will be George Harrison track, if I can find it. I've got it here somewhere. Now this is professional. Yes, it is. Here I am. Rubber Soul. Came out sometime in the 60s, and this is George inspiring bands like the Byrds to play in the way that they do. This is If I Needed Someone.
Right.
If I needed someone to love, you're the one that I'd be thinking of. If I needed someone, if I had some more time to spend, then I guess I'd be with you, my friend. If I needed someone, had you come some other day, then it might not have been like this. But you see now I'm too much in love. Call your number on my wall, and maybe you will get a call from me. If I needed someone, your number on my wall, and maybe you will get a call from me. If I needed someone,
over rather abruptly, wasn't it?
the mighty chimes there of George Harrison. I was just saying to you, I got my first 12-string guitar primarily to learn to play that riff, and one day I'll eventually master it.
What a fabulous song, though. Lovely choice. Oh, lovely choice.
Yeah, beautiful. Really, you know, seemed like quite a good soul, did our George, in all fairness. But
totally, yeah.
But the playing on that is absolutely absolutely marvellous. Like your style. So here we are, Twin Peaks, Harbour Bazaar, the good bosun Zoe Howe, you know,
And the mighty Captain Stephen Hastings.
Oh, you're very kind. You're very kind. So, what's your thoughts? Where do you fancy going next, Zoe? What's your sort of next sort of Twin Peaks-esque Lynchian choice?
Well, I wondered whether it would be out of order if I could play my favourite George Harrison.
Oh, go for it! Absolutely,
a bit of it. It's quite long, but I first heard this one. My dad had the LP of the Concert for Bangladesh.
All right.
And this is where I first heard this song. But of course, it is on the album All Things Must Pass, not past. Goodness me, words, eh? I just can't, you know. Just go back to me, Enid Blyton. But anyway, this is Wah Wah, and it's rather fabulous, I think.
Oh,
Yeah, awesome stuff there. George Harrison, Wawa, with the massive production of Phil Spector, of course, the Wall of Sound. It's such an interesting kind of mix with George's slightly kind of melancholy, plaintive, beautiful voice and the way he plays. It's just, I just love it. What did you think? Do you know that? I'm sure you must be familiar with that album.
I don't know it as well as I ought. I'm aware of it. I'm aware, you know, a concert Bangladesh, and it was Ravi Shankar and George Harrison, wasn't it, who put on this, yeah, you know, huge charity concert, wasn't it, fundraiser. I don't know how much funds it actually raised in the end. Did it make a profit from the album or something, if I remember rightly?
I don't really know. I mean, it was sort of quote unquote before my time, but I just remember, you know, the album being in the house and just really falling in love with it. But then there's this really funny moment on there that I'm so glad they kept, because of course, you know, there was this audience full of you know, kind of hippies, all kind of, you know, chin stroking and like just really into the kind of into Ravi Shankar's music. And there's this track where you hear Ravi Shankar playing this very kind of spare music on the sitar, and it's just, it's really kind of, oh yeah, it's like there's a lot of space in it, and everyone's like really digging it, and they and they just start cheering and stuff. And then he says, Ravi Shankar comes on the mic and he says, well, I'm very glad you enjoyed the tuning up so much. That means you're definitely going to enjoy the actual song that I'm going to play. he really kind of called out all these posy, poncy, you know, hippies and hipsters in the audience, sort of like chin stroking, going, yeah, I really get this. And just they're cheering the tuning up. But yes, very much appreciated the enthusiasm, apparently.
I think you can see the legacy of that comment with people attending WOMAD at times, if you don't mind me saying.
Absolutely.
You know, it's just like someone's, you know, someone's banging their knee with, well, you know, with somebody else's chin or whatever. And it's just all a bit, we don't know, sometimes with that whole thing, we don't know the good stuff from the bad. Do you know what I mean? It's everything. It's
sort of, yeah, performative. I think the word, you know, we hear the word performative a lot these days, and it's a really useful one for things like that. But it's quite good to kind of pop the bubble of posiness.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm with you. I'm with you there completely. But no, what I was thinking of with the Bangladesh concert, I think there was money raised from the actual gig itself, quite a serious chunk of money. But the album sales were phenomenal.
Right.
And the album generated millions in terms of royalties and revenues. And I can't remember what it was, but there was some legal issue, some tax issue, where essentially that money that was raised didn't actually go to the charity or to, you know, for something like about 20 years later. It wasn't till the 80s, I think, till those funds actually went where they were supposed to be. So it was a
really
massive success. But it was some tax issue in America, they wouldn't let it go. Unlike later on, where you had the whole Band-Aid thing, where everyone kind of was, yeah, let's everyone give up what we have to give up to make sure this money goes to people as quickly as possible. It got a bit tied up there. But yeah, what a fantastic track. Like your style, very much indeed. Good stuff. So where are we going to go next? So what's it going to be?
Well, I was going to say, I'm going to save that one till later. Okay, I mentioned earlier the actor who played Jerry Horn in Twin Peaks, who's the kind of crazy sort of wild card brother of the kind of richest dude in town, is very sleazy. But Jerry Horn, he kind of in the 2017 series, he's really kind of gone off the radar. He's very kind of very much a free spirit, shall we say, and you know, he's a kind of crazy old dude, just loves getting high, still a bit of a troublemaker, but very charming. And we bought the DVD, of course. We are pretty crazy sort of completists of the Twin Peaks variety, and there's some lovely extras, DVD extras, in which you sort of see a bit of the filming of the new series, and it's just really lovely, and you kind of you know, it's very well judged, shall we say. And there's this magical moment where David Patrick Kelly, who is the actor who plays Jerry Horn, this crazy kind of wacky character, starts to just play, I think it's a ukulele or a little banjolele, and sing this very sensitive song, which sounds like an old Irish folk song or something. And it's just this magical little moment between scenes. And you think, well, my God, you know, of course, you know, acting, he is an actor, so he's not necessarily going to be like his character. But it was just this beautiful little moment, and it kind of got me into thinking, well, you know, I want to know a bit more about his music and what he does when he's not an actor.
David Kelly, did you? What was his name?
Patrick Kelly.
Okay.
Is his name. And there is music that can be found online of his, he's just a really interesting guy. But the first, I've got two tracks of his I'd like to play. One of which, at least, sounds like it should belong on the Twin Peaks soundtrack itself. But this is actually a live recording. It's from Max's Kansas City. It's on an album called Rip Van Boy Man by David Patrick Kelly, and the song is called Cupid and the Champ, and it's at Max's Kansas City.
Started off with our Motown sound there. Here's a little more adolescent confessional number.
Stupid Cupid. 1, 2, 3, 4.
You only see me here, whispered the young ex-fighter. You only see me here in this one life, and I only got one death. Work in the kitchens, he told me about his life, his troubles with his wife, the music he liked. I asked him, how do you pass your time? What lost moments will you find? Sometimes life seems like a cheap crime, but sometimes it seems like a wind chime. It seems just like a wind chime, and I feel like a stupid Cupid running home with a melody. And this windfall is gonna be the life of me. Yes, it's gonna be the life of me. Oh, it's gonna be the life of me. I've been around the world, you know, he said with a great round laugh. I've been around the world and I've been twice champion. Clearing the tables, we talked into the night about women and the music we liked. I asked him, how do you pass your time? What lost moments will you find? Sometimes life seems like a cheap crime, don't it? But sometimes, oh, it seems like a wind chime. It seems just like a wind chime. And I feel like a stupid Cupid running home with a melody. And this windfall is gonna be the life of me. Yes, it's gonna be the life of me. Oh, it's gonna be the life of me. They don't know how to run this place, he said with a champion's confidence. They don't know how to run this place, but maybe I do. The place shut down, the champ left town. All I remember is the music we like. How do you pass your time? What lost moments will you find? Sometimes life seems just like a cheap crime, don't it? But sometimes, oh, it seems like a wind chime. It seems just like a wind chime. And I feel like a stupid Cupid running home with a melody. And this windfall is gonna be the life of me. Yes, it's gonna be, well, the life of me. Oh, it's gonna be the life of me. Yes, it's gonna be the life of me.
Well, there you have it.
Oh, that's my fault.
David, will you just Dave, he's got to learn when to leave, frankly.
But he burst back in at the end there. Can I just say, I love the fact I just sent you a message to say there's a, what I tried to say, there was a splash of Towns Van Zandt in there, and it's come up as a marvellously better name, Towns Van Sandy.
Because I was going to say, I'm not familiar with Towns Van Sandy. I mean, I thought, who's this? I'm going to pretend to know who it is so that Stephen's impressed. But in fact, it's also correct.
Oh, the marvellous Towns Van Sandy. He started off as a Blue Peter presenter, apparently, and then the country music took him, and he never worked again, frankly. But there we go. That was, as you say, this very just mentioned on the wires there as well. Quite CSN-y going on in there too.
That's what sort of stood out to me, definitely. And I mean, also, I don't know about you, but sometimes things do seem like a wind chime, don't they, Stephen?
Well, to be fair, I said to Jenny earlier today, exactly that. I'd made some calzones, to be honest.
And, okay.
And I didn't crimp the edges as well as I should on one of them, so there was a kind of calzone explosion, and I did at that moment, as I drew them from the Arga, I did look down and say, do you know, Jenny, sometimes it's just like a wind chime.
Sometimes it is. It's so true, and it's something that people don't always articulate, but frankly, I think they should, because I felt not so long ago that things were really getting very much like a wind chime.
Right.
In my life. I don't know what to do about that, really, but that's just, you know, you just got to move through it like the wind does through the wind chimes.
Well, what I would say is if anybody out there listening is having any experiences and worrying about about being like a wind chime, just contact us at Shipful of Bombs. That's www.sfob.co.uk and share how you're feeling.
Yes.
should we set up, there should be a wind chime helpline, don't you think?
I mean, surely there's one already. Surely.
That's going to be my project for the week. It's going to found the wind chime hotline. Rather cool. So there you go, www.sfob.co.uk. We're Ship Full of Bombs, and this is the Harbour Bazaar. Having a wonderful sort of, well, deep in the second lockdown with the good bosun Zoe Howe there, and Marvellous, who seems to be enjoying wind chimes more than we kind of... Oh, hold on a minute. Stay there.
What's happening? Is it the wind chime, please? Oh, what? What do we call that, though?
Oh, well, it's kind of... I don't know. Is it a wind chime?
I don't think it is if it doesn't make a sound. But the thing is, there's no point in there being a wind chime. It has to be wind chimes, doesn't it? Otherwise, if there's only one wind chime, it doesn't clank against other wind chimes. So actually, a wind chime is silent. But, you know, they're normally made of metal or wood. So I would call what you just presented to me there more of a kind of a wind umbrella.
It was not a fan, really, wasn't it? It was
a twirly thing.
I feel as though I've disappointed and let you down there, Zoe, to be honest.
This has been an emotional roller coaster, frankly, this whole exchange, and I think we need to play another song so I can just collect myself.
Estáis escuchando al Harvard Bazaar con Stephen Hastings y Zoe Howe en la radio Ship Full of Bombs.
Good stuff. Well, I like your style. Let's take that moment. We're just over halfway through the show, which does mean that we do hit the high points. We do hit the top of the shop, because of course it's at this moment we have to go to Zoe for what is this month's Camembert Corner.
Well, I'm glad you asked, because actually this is you'll be relieved this year, not this year, this month, this particular show, to know that I've actually toned down the Camembert in this particular corner, because as earlier with the music of Julie Cruz that's featured on Twin Peaks, it's beautiful, but there is a slight note of camp, kind of tacky naffness to it as well, but it's still very charming and beautiful, and we just sort of go with it, whether it's with a sort of slightly kind of tacky sounding keyboard sound in the background or whatever. There's just something that could perhaps lend itself sort of creep towards Camembert Corner, maybe not install itself in there in a full sort of cheese way. So I have chosen another Julie Cruz song. It's from the album The Voice of Love. And also I thought it'd be worth mentioning, or Mirth Wenchening, as I was just about to say, just call myself.
I was at school with him.
It's Mirth Wenchening, Stephen, that, well, today is indeed, as you say, the 29th of November. What is just around the corner, the 1st of November, which is Julie Cruz's birthday.
I say, did you know she shares her birthday with David Lynch?
I didn't. Well, it makes sense, doesn't it, really? Because he's got five birthdays a year.
I think, yeah, there are the official five. And then I think there's a secret underground one as well. Yes. 1st of November, we're just going to say happy birthday to Julie Cruz.
Yes, that was the 1st of December.
Oh, sorry, sorry.
So she's a Sagittarius indeed. So make of that what you will. And the song we're about to play is Until the End of the World.
Thank you.
That didn't really deserve to be in Camembert Corner, I don't think. I think that was unfair of me to put Julie Cruz there.
I tend to agree. It was, you know, very cool, actually. It reminded me, I know it's off somewhere else. There was something going on with the drums. There's a couple of tracks by Mogwai that reminded me of. Do you know what I mean? I thought it's going to do that thing where it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. But no, I thought that's actually very cool. I like it.
Yeah.
I think next month you need to double down on the Camembert Corner. Make it none more cheesy.
If you insist, Mr. Hastings, if you insist.
No problem at all. Here we are, after Camembert Corner. I invariably play a glorious 60s pop moment, but I wanted to have something that was kind of instrumentally, that would sort of loosely fit around some of the instrumental things we've been hearing. So I'm having a go, but first time on the Harbour Bazaar. We've never played anything by the Andrew Oldham Orchestra, so I think we should play Satisfaction. Go the mighty Andrew Oldham Orchestra with open brackets I can't get no close brackets Satisfaction from the 1965 album The Rolling Stones Songbook. Marvelous thing.
That was a fantastic choice, Stephen. I loved it.
Cool. That was a bit of a railway classic for a while. I think everyone who DJ'd there would stick out at some point during the evening. Do you know what I mean? But
excellent marvelous.
Just on the Twin Peaks theme, just getting some stats and facts. I do like a stat and fact. Mm-hmm. We haven't had Owen doing stats and facts for many years on the show. Maybe when we come out of long time, we may have a call back to that at some point. But just reading in terms of the viewing figures, what we were talking about earlier in terms of the popularity of Twin Peaks. So the 2-hour pilot was the highest rated program in America for the 1989-1990 season, with a 22 rating and was viewed by 33% of the audience. Now, in terms of the American rating system, every one of those points, there was 22 of them, equates to 921,000 homes, which means that the 2-hour pilot, when it was shown, realistically was watched by about 19 million people.
Oh, wow.
I mean, that's just phenomenal. It basically, when it went on to a 1-hour show, it was the highest ABC rated show in 4 years, and it was on a 9 p.m. Thursday slot. And opposite that was the program that was running opposite, I can't remember, on NBC, was Cheers. Uh-huh. And it actually reduced Cheers' rating with an average of 16.2 on each show, which basically means around 15 million people were watching that every week that it came out. And it's the first program that defines the term the water cooler syndrome, which has obviously become a cliche of something which people watch that everyone's kind of talking about the next day, which was actually the senior vice president of ABC at the time was a guy called Alan Wurzel, and he used that phrase because essentially the night that they showed it on the Thursday, the Friday morning, the first thing that people were talking about was actually Twin Peaks as a program. So that's pretty successful. That's phenomenal for a program that's so peculiar at times.
That's totally amazing. I love that. That's really, really interesting stuff, Stephen.
Like your style. Good, yeah. Stats and
facts.
There you go. I do. I'm sorry. I've stepped in rowing there with some stats and facts. So all rather marvellous. So we are charging through the second half of our Hard Bazaar. And so we're going to try and cram in as much music as we possibly can in the sort of second half. So in our Lynchian kind of theme, where are you thinking of next?
I would like to play a track by Thought Gang. And Thought Gang are David Lynch and Angelo Badalamenti, who I mentioned earlier. He composed the Twin Peaks music. So this is a sort of musical collaboration between the two of them. And it's really interesting, and it's all very much of the same kind of mood. And this song is called Woodcutters from Fiery Ships.
Ants were walking fast, and they disappeared finally into some tall grass. Pete couldn't see where they went or what they were after. It was a gray, muggy day with some rain. A light wind was blowing. Pete saw the girl next door take off her clothes last night and walk through her house nude. She went into a back room and Pete waited for her to come out, but she never did. Pete saw two children of the earth come out of the ground after that. A cat killed one of them and played with the other until one of its legs came off. The moon was half full. Someone was in Pete's yard last night. Pete heard the person walk past his window and into the bushes, then out of the yard again. Pete couldn't see them because the lights were on in his house. At the diner, Pete heard a man say that the doctors had cut him down his neck and into his chest. They lifted his flesh away and parted his ribs and scraped his arteries. A gray man with big ears lit a big cigar. Smoke drifted over Pete's apple pie. The men at the other table were very pale and were drinking Bloody Marys. Nothing is moving in Pete's backyard. He hears distant traffic and the electric clock is grinding gears near him. Several woodcutters from fiery ships are coming in his door. They are dressed in wool and are opening his drawers and his refrigerator. One of them runs his hand up and down Pete's walls, stopping now and then and laughing. They have discovered Pete and have him by the arms, and Pete's going with them out under the orange tree. They keep hitting Pete's knees with their smoking pipes. The sun is coming out and a bird hops in the bushes. The woodcutters are digging a hole. Pete is upset about things. His brain is sorting out information gleaned from this confusing life. mate. Things aren't making sense. For instance, why is that boy bleeding from the mouth? Everything is moving except where it is perfectly still. Peace curtains open and close. Smoke fills his room. Blood shoots from the cracks. The appliances roar. Wind blows things. Hurricanes through his lungs and the roots come out. Woodcutters are everywhere now, moving quickly, loading peat into their craft. The dogs howl in the night and blood rain fills the streets. Babies float and hit. Stars shoot and burst and blue lightning breaks the rotted gut of ants. Swirls of flying ants are in Pete's room now, taking his shoes across the room as the fiery ship roars. From the fiery ship, Pete sees the girl now as she falls. The first bump, then the second. Maintenance men employed by the city cleaned her kitchen, but it took 2 days. Pete and the woodcutters were 5 trillion miles away by then. P.S. Pete learned to enjoy the woodcutters and their particular brand of humor.
Yes, so there you go.
That was
fiery ship.
Phenomenal.
It's incredible. And it's got that typical Lynchian thing, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to make any sense. It's just this strange kind of mood that they created. I mean, this album was just, as he called it, a grand experiment. It wasn't particularly to be used for anything, but also Twin Peaks fans will note that, you know, this album, I think, came out in 2001. And of course, the Twin Peaks series that came out in 2017, the third series, does feature the Woodsmen, which are these strange, mysterious, shadowy men who kind of materialize and have a very dark presence as well. So this is obviously, I wonder whether maybe there's a connection with that. He wanted to kind of have this character, and he was already conjuring up the kind of the woodcutters in this kind of in this project here, the Thought Gang project, with Angelo Badalamenti.
It does sound like there's conscious or unconscious, those parallels will be there. Do you know what I mean? In terms of that was a phenomenal track. I can't believe how good that was. I want to hear more, if that's all right. Fantastic. Zoe, thank you. That's genuinely so so up my alley. It's kind of scary. Fantastic.
The owls are not what they seem.
As I sit sipping from my Twin Peaks mug, which bears the logo of the Double R Diner of Twin Peaks fame, and the quote, coffee black as midnight on a moonless night. That's Agent Cooper style black coffee, that is. I raise my mug to David Lynch for many decisions that he made, not least this one, which was to not only use this song by Muddy Magnolias, it's American Woman, in series 3, but to slow it down. And it sounds absolutely brilliant that way. So salute to Mr. Lynch for that. And also, before we play that song, I want to mention a very special possession of mine, which was created by dear friend Ray Morgan. It is in fact a framed tapestry of the words, "The owls are not what they seem," which is, of course, and Twin Peaks fans will know, is a sort of recurring phrase that crops up through the series, and it's sort of words to live by as well, really. I say it a lot. So I sip my coffee, I salute Mr. Lynch, and I warn you all that the owls are never what they seem. This is American Woman by Muddy Magnolias. This is the David Lynch remix.
Thank you. said I can't. Do I look like the stepping fetch type? I'm a whole lot of grown-ass American woman.
amazing Snake Eyes, and that was by Trouble, and they are very interesting band, not just because they are clearly noir R&B kings, with a hint of morphine there, I think, and also a little bit of kind of laid back James Chancey sort of vibe. But they are interesting also because they featured in a 2017 series of Twin Peaks, in which every episode showcased a different kind of contemporary group at the end, playing at the Bang Bang Bar. And this group is actually David Lynch's son, Riley Lynch, on guitar, and longtime music supervisor Dean Hurley on the drums. And he also engineered the Thought Gang record as well, very much involved. He also co-wrote Slow 30s Room, which we heard earlier. And the sax, Alex Chang Hung Tai from Dirty Beaches as well.
That's really, that was a fabulous track, actually, in terms of it's captured, again, going back to where we started off with that. What did we start off? It was the Dick Penner track, Cindy Lou, going back to that kind of 50s thing going on in there, capturing the some mood of it. Exactly. And that sax was so sleazy. And
yeah.
Nicely sort of, you know, had that kind of big shot film noir thing going on. Do you know what I mean? Sort of, there's somebody going to be wearing, you know, collar up under a lamppost somewhere chewing a match. Do you know what I mean? Very, very, very fabulous. Very fabulous. Inspired by that, if that's all right, I wanted to play a track by Gemma Ray, who is a, who you may know from Basildon, of course, only up the road.
Billericay, I believe.
Billericay, posh Basildon, as they say. But, people in Billericay would never admit to coming from Basildon, of course. But people in Billericay will also say they actually come from Stock, which is the village a little bit further up, which is very expensive and a bit posh, is Stock, in all fairness.
Very beautiful is Stock, absolutely. No, Gemma Ray and I know each other, in fact. She's an extremely good egg, and she now lives in Berlin, as you probably know.
Well, I don't know too much about her. I'm aware of the that kind of local connection, and sort of there's that sort of film music-y kind of thing going on there as well. But I don't know that much about her. I just love this track particularly from an album called The Exodus Suite. Have you worked with her in the past, or what's your?
Yeah, I remember it was probably over 10 years ago now, but we've always kept in touch. It was an evening, a Talking Musical Revolutions evening, which the music writer Gavin Martin and John Robb used to run. And I was involved from the very beginning with those evenings, actually. We started at the Secret Garden Party, and then they kind of migrated to different places like the Boogaloo in North London. And then they kind of found a home for a while at the Three Blind Mice in Shoreditch. Okay. And that was, and so essentially it was music and it was readings, and they were kind of a little bit like salon evenings, I suppose. And I think it was probably 2010, because I think I was reading from How's Your Dad, which was my book about my second book, about the children of rock stars and the shadow in which they find themselves. And Gemma Ray, who's a good friend of Gavin's as well, was playing live that evening, a little solo set. And I remember she played Touch Me, I'm Sick. Oh, and it was fantastic and lots of reverb. And she just had us all in the palm of her hand. And that was the first time we met. And I've got a lovely picture of us from that evening. And as I say, we sort of kept in touch in a kind of mild way since then. But, you know, on Instagram and all the rest of it. But it's, our dear mutual friend, Gavin Martin, who brought us together that evening. And it was great. She's fantastic.
Fabulous stuff. I'm looking forward to hearing more. I didn't know there was that connection, but that's absolutely marvellous. Like your style, like your style. So this is Caldera Caldera, and there is reverb galore on this, as you would well imagine, and rightfully so.
From her. with that fountain of lava forever streaming down your chest. Smoke curls round and round, flames flicker and sneer. You're bringing me close to something, bringing me close to something here.
Very cool, isn't it? Reverb heavy from when was that? I think it was 2016 that that album was out particularly. But no, absolutely fabulous. I didn't know you had that connection as well. So that's all rather groovy and all rather marvellous.
A small world indeed, Mr. Hastings.
Yes, indeed. But a fine world it can be as well, which is...
It can occasionally be, yes.
depends on your wind chimes, of course. But
well, it is very true indeed. Don't get me started on those again.
Keep away from the wind chimes. But so here we are. We're rolling towards the end of the show. Obviously, we're going to try and cram as much as we can as we get there with our Twin Peaks themed Harbour Bazaar. But thank you so much for sort of tuning in. Always very much appreciated. And I would strongly recommend, you know, having a delve around in our archive of podcasts now from across the station ship full of bombs. You can find us most quickly if you go to our website, www.sfob.co.uk. Podcasts, the shows, we're on pretty much most platforms now. There's been a few Spotify wobbles of late, but in terms of that's their end, not us, but Apple Music, Podbean, Amazon Music, wherever you get your podcast from, if you're typing in Ship Full of Bombs, you should be able to find the archive of all the shows. And have a delve around, have a listen. And if you like what you hear, then maybe tell your friends, which we would appreciate enormously. But so thanks very much to everybody. So Zoe, here we are. Where do you fancy flinging the Twin Peaks vibe net next?
Well, I fancy, first of all, sharing a little tale with you, dear Captain Hastings and listeners all, because as if by pure magic, very Lynchian magic, timing-wise, I don't know if you subscribe to this Open Culture mailing list. It's very, very interesting, and they send out kind of quite interesting mail outs. It could be about anything, but it's all kind of creativity. It's fascinating stuff. And just the other day, this one popped up. David Lynch explaining how simple daily habits enhance his creativity. Now, so I thought, well, I must mention that because obviously we're doing our Twin Peaks show. And David Lynch is very well known for being involved with transcendental meditation. So I kind of thought that that's the way this piece would go. But actually, it wasn't. So I'm going to read you a little bit, if I may.
Okay.
Open Culture website, openculture.com. So they say, at first glance, Madame Bovary and Blue Velvet would seem to have little in common, as would their creators. But the artistic life of that Gustave Flaubert led and the one David Lynch now leads share a basic precept. Be regular and orderly in your life, as the former put it, so that you may be violent and original in your work. Lynch has spoken about his ways as an artistic creature of habit many times over. And he goes on to talk about how he would go to Bob's Big Boy Diner every day at 2:30 p.m. and have exactly the same thing. And this was one of his habit patterns he would get into. And the point of it was that if you have this very structured existence and you know, and have, you know, sort of really habitual behavior, because then your mind, as he says, your mind is free to think about other things, and you're kind of free to mentally go off to any place that you want to, and you've got this safe foundation to spring off from. And I thought that was really interesting, and it made me wonder, Mr. Hastings, do you have any such regular habits that you stick to allow your mind to go to other places and be violent in your creativity?
Well, violence in my creativity, that's a really, I mean, it's a great, great point that he's kind of making there. And in terms of that, certain things, keeping certain things sort of simple and sort of uncluttering your mind. If you're not having, it reminds me a little of Gilbert and George eating in the same cafe every day.
Yeah.
So, you know, but in maybe there was a bit more performance going on there as well, of course. But I think for me, particularly recently, where we're doing the whole lockdown thing as well, I think it's basically just getting out and walking. I'm a big person of that kind of, you deal with emotion through motion. If you walk with someone and you chat with them, your conversation becomes far more kind of open. Barriers kind of drop away a bit. You're just kind of more honest with each other, and I find what revitalizes me, honestly, and I maybe, you know, more so recently, it's walking with friends, just having a chat and basically sort of clearing the air in that way. And if I go out on my own as well, particularly, I make a point, I try not to listen to any music, I try not to have podcasts on, I'm just concentrating on exactly the thing doing there, which might just be listening to your sound of your own footsteps, or if cycling, you might be listening to the way the pedals turn and what have you. And I find that is the routine thing for me. I need to get out and walk. And at the moment I'm doing, you know, your classic 10,000 steps a day for a charity thing for my oldest and greatest, for what he died of and what have you. So, but that's kind of focusing. And I think what I've been doing over the last, suppose since summer really, whilst on those walks, is, again, I've been putting it on Instagram, and I think you've liked a few of them. I've been taking a series of solo chair pictures.
Yes, I love these. Absolutely love them. Tell me more.
So basically, I was walking on the seafront, and the first one, there was just one chair on its own that was canute-like, left by the waves. And I thought, well, I've got to take that. That's an interesting kind of shot. And it kind of grew from there. But what I do is I make a point that there can't be any humans in the shot. It has to be solo chair. I use a Polaroid filter to take them. So again, I allow myself three shots. Nothing can be edited, and because of the filter that I'm kind of using with that as well, it becomes a little bit abstract in there. So you're like an old Polaroid, you're not quite sure exactly how it's going to come out. So I'm allowed to take three shots. There can be nobody else actually in the in there, and they have to, and they can't be moved. I can't put them where I want to be. So it's kind of found furniture shots. So If my aggressive creativity has peaked this summer, it is with my solo chair project. But
I love the Solo Chair project, and I hope that it continues as an ongoing photo essay long into the future, long beyond lockdown, if we ever get out of lockdown.
Oh, well, there we go. But no, I've been enjoying doing that. It's interesting. People who occasionally, she's the first time I've spoke publicly about Solo Chair. Do you know what I mean? But it's just that people, what is going on with Solo Chair? But it's quietly finding its own sort of thing, so that's all rather marvellous. What about yourself? I mean, you know, as a writer and everything, Zoe, in terms of working to deadlines and the discipline that kind of goes with that, how would you respond to that David Lynch quote?
I mean, I am not a creature of habit, particularly. I suppose we all are to a certain extent, but I need to introduce more habit into my life, I think, because I can tend towards the chaotic. That's my happy place. But I do every morning. I suppose, yeah, I do have a kind of habitual, you know, structure. So I have my coffee. I meditate. I spend a bit of time kind of in my thoughts, reflecting and stuff. And one of the things I used to do, and I'd like to get back into, is doing automatic drawing daily before my brain is really kind of woken up. By which I mean, I'm sure you know what automatic drawing is, but for those who don't, literally just sort of allowing the pen or pencil just to do whatever it wants on the paper. And it kind of is, or you can do automatic writing, just allow words to come. And, you know, the idea really is that, you know, psychics use this as a technique. You know, there's an element of channeling to it. So you can either use it just as a sort of brain freeing exercise or something deeper. And it can be very interesting to see, you know, even if you're not trying to sort of bring something through, as it were. I often do it with my eyes closed. Sometimes I do it with my non-dominant. Okay. To sort of free up my imagination and allow it to go into places that I wouldn't normally go. And it can be very interesting when you open your eyes and see what's waiting for you on the page. So that's quite fun. Yeah, I need to get back into that, really.
No, I think it, you know, I really like that David Lynch quote. I think it's really, it says something quite profound, very simply. It's very lovely in that sense. I'm going back with your with automatic, you know, writing, automatic painting, drawing. What I like with that thing as well is sometimes the actual media that you're using is as important. So if someone's doing something, I remember there was a Japanese artist talking about the fact that the brush is as important as the hand that's holding it, in the fact that, yeah, you know, that it will have its own character and it'll wear in a particular way, and that will also impact on what's being produced, and it's as valid. Do you know what I mean? It's sort of, I think it's a, that's a, that's a cool thing. I like your style.
Marvellous. I was thinking, shall we hear a little bit more from old Dean Hurley?
Go for it.
He's an interesting chap, not often talked about, but as I mentioned earlier, he is he's the drummer in Trouble. He's the music supervisor for David Lynch and has composed with him. And this is a track that turned up on the third series. And it's very interesting. It's just perfect for the mood that he's creating, of course. You know, he always gets it spot on. But what's interesting about this particular series is it's very much about things coming through the electrics and things kind of communicating through... Mm. Through the plugs and the mains and strange sounds and things other appearing through, you know, appearing where they shouldn't, frankly. So I wanted to play, he's got a few songs that kind of are in the background, you know, part of the score. So this is one of them. This is Electricity One by Dean Hurley.
Thank you.
Sorry, that ended rather abruptly.
It did. I think it was because it was just one of those sort of, it wasn't really a song, as it were. It was more kind of just in the background in the show. So, yeah, sorry about that.
It's compelling as well. Because, show we would have done when we were, you know, when we were allowed in the railway last year. I remember we did a show with the title, we had Strange Stories, Amazing Facts.
Oh, yes, I remember that. Yeah,
you know, which is that kind of classic, you know, the big old book of Strange and Mysterious Tales is a book I have in the, you know, in the other room on the shelves there, which I used to have as a child. And one of the stories in there that used to really weird me out as a child was that notion of people working in what would have been 1950s, even into the 60s, sort of switchboard kind of stuff, where people are using telephones and are being manually connected and this kind of stuff. And they would talk about there would be kind of lost lines where voices were still coming through on them, mm-hmm. even though they're not really connected any, you know, anywhere. There was recordings of this sort of whispers and sounds and strange static and stuff. And that notion of, you know, you're picking up a telephone and basically there's already a voice sort of speaking, using it to come through a bit, that truly weirded me out as a child, and the track you just played brought that completely back.
Oh wow,
really cool, actually.
That's amazing. I love that, and I love the notion of that as well. It's really, I remember us doing that show, by the way. It was really fun. It was definitely a happy place for me, the Strange Tales and Amazing Facts show. That was about a year ago, I suppose.
Yeah, it must be.
That's great. So just love that, and it sort of taps into that again, the Twilight Zone sort of vibe, or the kind of the, you know, they're weird though, because telephones and those sorts of things, you never quite know, because they are essentially, they're a medium for communication, and that can mean all sorts of things, and strange things can come through. And my mum, who's very mediumistic and psychic, I remember when I don't have a landline anymore, I use the mobile, but there's something about landlines. I remember she would phone me up on the landline, we'd be having a chat, and she'd say, oh, hello. I said, oh, what's that? And she said, oh, I'm just saying hello to Dylan. I heard him say hello to me in the background. And I said, no, I'm on my own. There's no one here. And she'd often pick up on things, strange sounds. Or she'd say, are you busy? I can hear you typing. I said, no, I'm like lying on the carpet on my back with nowhere near my, you know, so she'd pick up on things coming through. And I think telephones are quite strange things, and radios too. You know, even Zoom calls, if you record Zoom calls, sometimes odd things can turn up on the recordings. Yeah. Or maybe that's just me, I don't know.
Well, I don't know. I think I do think, as I say, with going back with that track and what we were saying, there is, I don't know why that resonated with me so much as a child, but it really did, that idea that there is ghosts in the machine, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I love the lost lines and lost voices from the past still coming through the wires. That's so weird.
Yeah, well, good stuff. Like your style. Well, we are chasing towards, going to have the opportunity to squeeze in a couple more tracks. So I'm really enjoying what you've been playing, though. It's been fantastic in terms of with the sort of Twin Peaks theme that we have, our Lynchian theme. There was a man who, as a younger person, apparently was quite into plumbing. And he said he found great joy in directing water, which is a thing, I think, a wonderful thing to do. Are you a plumber? No, I direct water.
Quite right.
There we go. So one more from yourself, Zoe. What are you going to go for, do you think?
More from me? Oh, that's very generous of you. I feel like I've held for a long time. But no problem from my point of view, because I've got loads of songs to choose from, as I'm sure you do too. Well, this is a song, I mean, you mentioned before, you know, the idea of songs that maybe could have been on Twin Peaks but weren't. This is an artist called Cigarettes After Sex. They appeared on the soundtrack for Killing Eve, actually.
Oh, okay.
And this song is simply called K, as in the letter K, rather than the kind of Manuel from the Fawlty Towers retort, as it were.
Nice connection, of course. We don't bring Manuel up as often as we possibly should.
Let this change tonight.
Thank you. sitting down in a restaurant waiting for the check. We had made love earlier that day with no strings attached, but I could tell that something had changed how you looked at me.
Cigarettes After Sex with Kay, which has that sort of slightly dreamy, soft but slightly creepy quality that I think is very Twin Peaks.
That was fabulous, actually. I don't know that track at all, but it fitted in so perfectly with this whole you know theme around Twin Peaks. And I think what a wonderful theme you've chosen, if you don't mind me here with this one, Zoe, as well, in terms of, because it enables. It's just so atmospheric. It's just got so many places you can kind of go with it. So I think there's been some really lovely music this evening. Good choice. Quite spooky things going on as well, of course.
Definitely. slightly spooky, some very spooky things. And it's funny because I actually remember it was a few shows ago when we were still in the railway that we, I think it was a joint decision to do a Twin Peaks yeah. show, because we were talking about it and enthusing. And I remember saying, George, do you like Twin Peaks? No. And then it was like, Owen, what about you? Do you like Twin Peaks? Never seen it, never want to. And it's like this really divisive, polarizing influence in our lives, you know, in popular culture. But I'm very glad we did it, you know, even if we were, you know, well, it was two against two, wasn't it? It was going
to absolutely happen. But they're not here tonight and we are, so we win, basically. Simple as that. Cool. All right, we're really rolling to sort of end. And I just a couple of bits for me. I think one of the kind of key scenes, I think one of the ones which really became sort of part of the culture was where Agent Cooper, he goes into the red room, isn't it? The dream room. And isn't there a gentleman of diminutive height who's speaking in tongues, or is he speaking backwards? Is he speaking backwards?
Yeah, they're all speaking backwards, all the characters in that red room. And they actually literally are. They actually were made to learn to literally speak backwards so that their mouth movements would fit the backwards recording. It's really interesting. So yeah, absolutely. It's little Jimmy Scott, I believe.
Oh, was that who that was? I didn't know that. That makes, again, makes perfect. Big. We should spend more time with Jimmy Scott at some point as well. In all fairness, that's absolutely kind of wonderful. But if we could, gonna, you know, running out of time, so just gonna kind of squeeze a last sort of bit in. But what I wanted to say was thank you so much for, you know, everything this evening. It's been fabulous. Really, really enjoyed it. Like your style.
Me too, and some marvellous choices from yourself as well.
No problem at all. Well, in that case, what can I say? But, you know, thank you for listening, everybody. Thank you, Zoe. Thank you, the good Bosun Howe, obviously.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's been a treat, as always.
Like your style. So, catch up with, you know, enjoy the podcast. Tell your friends, like and subscribe, as I believe the young people say. So, all rather marvellous. But just finishing off, because Agent Cooper, basically, things would come to him in his dreams, which would give him the opportunity to sort of solve what he needed to kind of solve. Here's a little bit of Dance of the Dream Man. I'm going to finish off with, as we rightfully should, with a bit of Django Reinhardt. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and see you next month.
though the days are long, twilight sings a song of the happiness that used to be. Soon my eyes will close, soon I'll find repose, and in dreams you're always near to me. I'll see you in my dreams, hold you in my dreams. Someone took you out of my arms, still I feel the thrill of your charm. Lips that once were mine, tender eyes that shine, they will light my way tonight. I'll see you in my dream. Tender eyes that shine, they will light my way tonight. I'll see you in my dream. They will light my lonely way tonight. I'll see in my dreams.
Thank you.